If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
All right, everybody, this is the How to Hunt Deer podcast. It's your hosts, Dan and Jason again. Jason, last week I had to do a solo episode because It sounds like you had Bob Vila in your house doing finishing off the project of this remodel or whatever.
I'd say we're far from finished off, but yeah, mm-hmm. they had to take the interior wall of our kitchen down to attach the actual addition. And so they've kept it walled off, you know, with siding and everything on there for this entire length of time just to keep the heat in. And so now we've got these great big electric heaters, you know, heating that area until they get all the HVAC hooked up. And so it's kind of, it's a mess. So basically like the north wall of our kitchen is that insulation foam board, that pink stuff. And you know, it is what it is. It'll be nice when it's done, but it's like the end is not soon enough.
Yeah. And when's your kid's due date?
May 20th.
So that's coming up, dude.
Yeah.
It's like, it's going to be here faster than what you think.
Yeah. Yeah. So this week she'll be 27 weeks and I mean, that's flying by, you know, but we've talked about this addition since, well, I mean, we met with a guy in April last year, you know, so it's like, it's amazing how the process of it all goes, you know, and adding an addition to a house of this age is, I mean, it has its challenges, you know, but yeah. There's some things that could have, I guess, gone smoother, but yeah. Then, you know, the end result is what you have to look at too. So.
Yeah, that's right. Dude, I tell you what, it's funny. It's so crazy that, you know, my buddy's a contractor and he's like, he has to deal with all the subcontractors when it comes to like building houses and, you know, get the flooring guy in, get the electrician in, and having that all mesh up. And then some guys just don't show up on days that they're supposed to show up. And then it just slowly every single day keeps getting pushed back. And then, you know, it's like, oh, we'll have this done by November or whatever the date is. And then it's like two weeks later, or then it's like, no one shows up and it's been pushed back 3, 4, 5 months at yeah. that point. So,
yeah, I mean, our original deadline was Christmas, but you mm-hmm. know, I, in all reality, like I know how that works too. You know, we're yeah. not going to meet deadlines. It's just, and you know, Mother Nature hit, you know, we had a bunch yeah. of snow and that changed yeah. some things too. And then it got really cold. And so, I mean, you got to flex with it, but I mean, with the weather we're having here, technically I could go to work right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy that, you know, you're right now you're planning, but no one plans for 2 weeks of 40 to 60 degree weather right. in February.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Let me ask you a question. What would you be doing right now if you had a job?
Oh, so I got a couple like tree jobs, like tree removal jobs, fence lines and just trimming up the round yards and stuff. But then there's also the early cleanups for mulching, stuff like that. So
yeah.
I'd be doing some of that. You know, yeah. I can't get a whole lot of material in right now because, I mean, you're going to get into road posting issues and then you're going to yeah. have to wait for mulch to be delivered. And so there's yeah. there's that game, too. We're a little early, but, yeah, we were 61 yesterday, so.
Yeah, same here. Same here. That's crazy. Let me ask you this, you know, before we do that, let's do our commercial real quick. You want to sure. Shout out our partner?
Yeah, yeah. So Code Blue Scents, guys. Definitely go check them out with all the full line of the lures and synthetics and the sprays that they have to offer, the detergents and everything. It's a full line, and they started to do some bundle packages, you know, yep. where you can get the, especially like the, you and I use the Rope-A-Dope system a lot. Yep. You can get 2-in-1 there. But I've been using them for quite a while, just that system in general. Mm-hmm. But then now with the detergents and the sprays, it's kind of a one-stop shop. So
yeah, they got everything you need as far as scents. Like if you want to smell like something or put some scent out there that smells like an animal, or if you yourself do not want to smell, go visit codebluescents.com, discount code HTH20 for 20% off. Go check that out. All right. Here's my question. We've had a fairly mild winter so far. We did get into an area where there was a lot of snow on the ground for a short period of time, and then it got brutally cold. But now here it is. It's February, and we like where I live, and I'm across most of the Midwest, there's not a lot of snow on the ground.
No.
There hasn't been a lot of moisture. It's been a very mild winter, but for the most part, dry winter. I bet you some guys down south would beg to differ about the dryness part of it, but it hasn't been anything major in the Midwest. Coming out of something like this, if let's say this warmer temps hold, there's no big snowstorms between now and March, what does that going to tell you? Or what have you seen over the course of your life about the deer herd coming out of a winter like this?
Well, I mean, rewind back to our big snowfall. I mean, so in an event like that, you know, where it sticks around for a little while, it can have yep. an impact on the deer. And then, you know, getting into that brutally cold, you know, that also has an impact on deer. But the fact that, like you said, we've been pretty mild temperature wise and mm-hmm. and very very dry, actually. I mean, when you consider all factors, we haven't had any rain or snow, so to speak, of for quite a while. And yesterday we made it down to Peoria for a tumbling competition, and yeah. it's dry everywhere and there's no everywhere. Snow. So my thoughts on it are, you know, if a buck or a doe, whatever it may be, was injured during the season, I would say that the snowfall that we initially got and then that brutally cold temperature for 2 weeks there, that would have probably did those deer in. But all in all, I think they've had a really easy winter to survive. So,
yeah. Yeah. And now you start going north into Minnesota, Wisconsin, maybe North Dakota, into Canada. I don't know how much snow they've had. I know there's places in the Northeast that had a lot of lake effect snow. That might be, but I think from the guys that I've talked to out in the East Coast, where you get that lake effect snow up in northern, upstate New York, places like that along Michigan, that the deer are just kind of used to it. They know where they need to be. They know where the cover is. They know, like, they just survive. And that's the one thing about what deer do, is they just survive, dude. And so I'm going to try to guess what's around here. I'm hoping that we get a little bit more rain or some precipitation so that it leads into the, like, not crazy wet all at one time in April and May when they're fawning. But I'm telling you, dude, I feel like because of this mild winter, they're going to be spread out. They're going to be able to find food really easy this time of year with no snow, very comfortable weather, as far as coldness is concerned. And in the areas here between me and you where we're hunting, dude, we could have a very healthy deer herd coming into the antler growing season. And no matter who you ask, if you have mild winters with a lot of food on the ground equals big antlered deer in the following fall. So yeah, that's just one thing that I've kind of seen over the years, and I'm hoping it's true, man.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think we definitely are going to need some moisture for the vegetation this spring and stuff. It also helps, you know, farmers get their food in, and us help with the food plots and stuff, you know. Yeah. So I think there is a catch right now, because I do feel like, you know, last year we were dry towards the end of the year, where we got really dry and dried up, and we go into winter and we have one snowfall basically that accumulates, and then the rest is just, I think we're drier than we think.
Yeah.
So that could play a factor there. But like, to your point, well, we have two major events basically that could have possibly did deer in, and one was a snow event and one was that 2 weeks of cold weather. But outside of that, I think we're in good shape. So,
yeah, but even then, like, I look at what the snow didn't necessarily, it came with cold temps like snow does, but I don't think the brutalness of how cold it was in my area came until after the snow had like kind of receded a little bit and melted a little bit. Then the brutal cold came. And I feel like even with that brutal cold, like if you're really injured, if the deer were really injured, yes, that could play a big role. But I feel like if you're injured that much this time of year, you're going to die anyway. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that snowfall that we had, you know, it was there, but I mean, they still had available food, you know. And then when the snow melted, I mean, that's when we actually got the cold temps. Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, the ground had pretty much thawed up right before we got those brutal temps. I mean, because we were very warm for a while there too. So it's a catch either way, you know. You want some mild temperatures going through winter, and you want deer to be feeding and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest catches with that is if you do like to shed hunt, and if you do like to do postseason scouting, it kind of changes that game plan too, because right now deer are spread out so far and wide.
I got a guy, he's a buddy of a buddy. I've shed hunted with him a couple times. I see him on social media yesterday, and I got some shed hunting jealousy, because he's finding really good antlers right now, and it's, you know, halfway through February. I haven't even been out once. My son went out last week, no, it was 2 weeks ago when my wife was in the hospital. He went out with my stepdad, and they found one shed antler that had been there for I don't know how many years. It's been hit by a plow, and I think that's how they found it, is it had been buried the previous year, and then they hit it with a plow. It broke off the main beam in the G3 and just kind of turned it up and that's how they found it. But outside of that, yeah, people are starting to find sheds, dude. And it, yeah. I have shed hunting jealousy. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. I went last week for a couple hours and I just kind of did I don't want to say a quick walk, cause I actually did walk fairly slow through the two properties, but, yeah. You know, I didn't hit any of the major areas yet, within those properties. I kind of did the outskirts, you know, and didn't get in the thick stuff, but yeah. the signs there, you know, so, I mean, you can do some postseason scouting, but the sign that like I'm using right now is relating back to fall. Yeah. I was kind of looking at where rubs and scrapes were and definite trails were, mm-hmm. and kind of putting all the pieces of that together, which kind of led me to something we talked about before we got on, this big buck topic, you know, and like how to hunt a big buck and how to hunt a mature buck. And I think one of these properties that's really given me success over the years is just identifying the fact that this property didn't have to be a giant property. Mm-hmm. When a property lays out to where it's in a buck's favor to bed and to food, and he has everything that he needs within there and is not pressured and stuff, you know, just putting all those things on the table. I think you can definitely get away with hunting a small piece. And I think that's where a lot of guys overlook it. You know, it could be a fence line, a finger, it could be off in the distance. It could be, you know, we've talked about the, terraces before, mm-hmm. you know, up in the fields and especially you get up into like the northeast corner of Iowa and stuff where they have terraces that come down because of the elevation change and stuff. I think that's a big thing to key in on because their travel system works off of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it works into probably what I guess a lot of guys go towards is people gravitate towards good looking property, you know, mm-hmm. like a big block of timber or a CRP field or something. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those, I don't want to say garbage properties, but they're the ones that produce.
Yeah. It's crazy. If you were to ask me, this is going to sound nuts, right? But, and we don't talk about habitat management on here too terribly much, but the farms that have always held the biggest deer for me are like a habitat manager's worst nightmare. Just like willows and multiflower rows and just grown up cattle pasture, like 50-year cattle pasture that has just junk everything.
Yep.
But it's thick, it's nasty, and they just love being there, dude. Yep. And they love being there for a reason. And it maybe it is, maybe it isn't like the invasive species of plants, but that honey locust and those nasty thorns and all that cockabirds, dude, they love, and the beggar's lice, they love being in those places.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just like, yeah, it sucks getting in and out of these places, but why would I want to change anything for that? Now, to piggyback off what you said, man, this idea of like the small properties, man, if you can have patience, especially number one, I know you've probably had to learn this over the years. You've probably had to force yourself on smaller properties to have patience and lay off until the best possible time. Is that an accurate statement?
Oh, well, I mean, that's a huge statement in itself. Yeah. I mean, obviously there's a risk reward. There's a pro and a con. And, you know, the big thing with a small piece is once you've identified a lot of those things is then figuring out what that time is for you, for that specific buck, or if it's a time of year. And then that's when you learn the game. I mean, you learn how much you can pressure it. You learn when you can go in, you know, and if it's a first week in November and you can only hunt mornings because of access, or you can only hunt evenings, that's where you have to be patient with it. But to that point, you could easily overlook 10 of these small properties, mm-hmm. and just continue drive by them. And then you could just go to that glamorous, you know, food plot and timber and everything, and may not have that success because you're just day in and day out at the same piece.
Yeah.
It was just something I was thinking of because I've hunted so many different pieces that were not inviting. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, and that's where Let's see. There was this 90-acre piece, and it was almost all road frontage. You could see all the way through it. And what I mean by that is from the road, I could see the back fence line of it. And maybe it was, I don't even know, 300, 400 acres, or not acres, yards from the road to the back fence line. So not very far at all, based off of, and it was 90 acres. It was probably a half mile long, maybe a little shorter, but it was just this rectangle right along a road. And then so the road curved and it butted up against another road. So two sides of it were road frontage, but there was three fingers that led up from the back fence line into this road, and it connected, the terrain connected to another piece of bigger timber. It connected to not only that, but like there's this back secluded CRP field on a different property that all, it just went straight down into this big CRP field, and the deer just you couldn't see them from the road.
Yeah.
When they were back in there. And so the first 2 years I hunted, two or three years I hunted that property, I did not have permission to hunt that big CRP field. And then I knocked on a door one day. I brought this lady some blueberries, to be honest with you. And I was like, hey, you know, my name's Dan, blah, blah, blah. I hunt on this piece of property right here. And I was just curious if you would allow me to bow hunt your property. She's like, well, I already have a gun hunter on there. I'm like, well, the good news is bow hunting doesn't interfere with any of the gun seasons. So I'm not there on the gun season, whatever. And long story short, this 90 acres was the foot in the door for the other property behind it, which was an 80 of all CRP. And there was some big trees. Like it was old cattle pasture, basically, that they had not put cattle in for several years. It was in a CRP program. So they planted CRP in it. And there was like two or three trees in this entire 80 acres that I could put a tree. And sure enough, dude, the deer just would funnel by these big acorn trees or these big oaks that had been there for 80 years, probably. And right. I don't know, man, it's just so unassuming. These deer live in either no cover, right? They nestle up to evergreen tree right there. Yep. In the middle of a CRP field, and they'll hide there, does and bucks, or they'll go into the thickest cockaburs and multiflower rose and all of this thick, nasty stuff that everybody wants to remove from their properties. And right. I'm like, dude, that's what I go and look for these days. And so long story short, that 90 acres held a ton of deer. And not just a ton, but because nobody put any energy or effort into that 90 acres, they also got to an older age class throughout the years. This is no joke. The first year I hunted that property, the very first year, I had encounters with seven deer that were 170 or bigger for antler size.
That's
seven.
Crazy. That's seven. Crazy.
And I had no idea what I was doing. That was before I kind of understood anything. So I can just imagine how many of those deer I just pushed out of there over the course of, you know what I mean? Just ruined it for them. Oh.
Well, and I think to that point, I mean, that's where I've, you know, gone into these properties too, is, you know, you walk into this uninviting property and you're just kind of like, hey, I don't even know where to set up, or, you know, I'm not sure that this is going to work, or it's thin, there's not much woods, and, you know, all the things run through your head where it's so negative. And then all of a sudden, boom, buck jumps up and takes off, and it's like, huh. And then, you know, you start to do this year in and year out, and then you finally realize that big buck's bed were big buck's bed. You know, so if that buck leaves the landscape or gets taken off or the neighbor shoots him or whatever, guess what? There will be another one that comes in. You know, the good areas are good areas. That's just plain and simple. I mean, so whether that area looks uninviting or it's full of multiflower rose and cedar trees and honey locusts, it may be the best spot that you got in your area too.
Yeah, that's a fact. Let me ask you a question. Here's something that it's more of a strategy question. You go in and you're scouting a piece of property. Let's say it's during the hunting season or right before the hunting season, and that scenario happens. You walk in and you jump up a really big buck. Like, what's the next step for you if you've identified a bed where they live on a specific wind direction and you're going in there and you jump them? What are you doing?
If it's during hunting season and I haven't put any pressure on that property, I'm definitely hunting that property the next 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are you putting that tree stand?
Not necessarily on that bed. You know, yeah. I like to be within shooting distance potentially, you know, yeah. But I have to have things play out too, to where the wind's got to be in my favor. You know, I don't want to be setting up in a stand where my wind blows into his bed either, yeah. You know, so there's a lot that goes into that. And then my access, you know, because obviously if I jumped him that day, I don't want to be jumping him the next 3 days, you right. know? So, my intentions are to go in and shoot that deer. So I'm going to slow my game down. I'm going to put the wind in my favor, and I'm not going to let that deer see me, smell me, or hear me. I'm still going to put that pressure on, and for the next 3 days, because I saw what I wanted to see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be that intrusive to where there's that potential for him to bust me.
Yeah, I feel you. Man, I'll tell you this: that's happened to me. I'll use 2000. The best example that I've had on this is 2012. And 2016 are the best examples. Well, and 2012, 2016, and I can't remember if it was 2020 or 21. Those are four scenarios where I jumped big deer. It wasn't maybe the deer that I jumped, but it brought me in to an area and I started hunting it, which resulted in me killing, a buck that I was kind of chasing. And so 2012 was a perfect example where I started walking into a property, really this part of the property for the first time since I ever had access to it. And I started, moving down this creek line, and I bumped a buck that was to the, like, really good buck. Right. And so he popped up right bedded right across he was bedded on the same side of the creek, but you could see a curve come, like a big bend in this creek. And then, he was sitting on the edge of it. So he was able to watch me come down this creek bed. And then I think my scent ended up getting to him, which he was in some really thick overgrown vines and thorns and all this stuff. He jumped up, took off running. So that day I went back to my truck, I got my hang on and my sticks, and I walked into this area and I set up a tree stand probably about 30 yards from where he was at. Mm-hmm. And I set up, and 2 days later, long story short, 2 days later, after about one all day sit and three tree stand changes to different trees within that area, I killed him on the third day.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Doing that and going in and out of, you know, on the right wind, my wind wasn't bad. I kind of understood what I needed to do at that point, as far as, you know, don't have your scent blow right to this buck. No brainer, right?
Right.
But you'd be surprised how many people don't understand that. I didn't understand that when I was.
It took me, yeah. It took a long time for me to realize that this buck right here, over my shoulder. So that's my biggest. And in 2013, I shot him. That summer leading into fall, you know, I was moving cameras and stuff, and it was only my second year on this property. I setting cameras up, and I walked to the west point. It just starts to narrow out into a waterway that comes in, and I jumped this particular deer right here at maybe 5 steps. And he jumps up, he turns around, he runs through the thickest, nastiest stuff. He splits his nose open, which I didn't realize until I had shot him in November that year. But I laid off of that after I jumped him. You know, he was bedded on the west side of this property. I set up to the east, and I literally only hunted that thing probably 3 times that fall. Yeah. And I shot him, I think it was November 2nd that year. But you learn a lot of lessons. And so my point with that was, so this deer was the same, one of the same places I went to last week. And in that area that he was bedded in, all other bucks have bedded in over the last 13 years, you know, and there's huge rubs, huge scrapes, and we're it's a really small piece, but it lays out perfect for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how once you find, it's like, have you ever heard someone say, once you see it, you can't unsee it?
Right.
Something, whatever it is. It's like maybe a person has a growth on their, a little growth on their nose or something. Yep. And then every time you see them, you kind of focus this on the little bump or the, I don't know, it could just be something real simple, or maybe they have crooked teeth like me and people maybe focus on it once they hear about it. But once you find those places, it's kind of hard to unsee or unknow about it. And that just, that's one of those things where it's like, bingo, I know where this buck could potentially be traveling.
Well, and it not only on that piece, but then like once you identify it on a certain piece, you can take that picture and you can move it into another piece, into another 100%. Piece. Cause you know, it, it's the principle and it's the layout and it's the wind, it's how everything factors in. And once you start to diagnose those things, the encounters come up. Just the sign comes up, you know, it's not so much like, oh, I'm hunting this boring fence line or I'm hunting this no man's land or whatever. Cause trust me, there's been many years and many hunts spent in a open field or spent in a empty tree stand with no deer, you know, learning these tactics too. Yeah. So,
yeah, man. So there's times, and I'm sure you feel like this, throughout the course of a season where you're just like, there's times where you're overthinking your strategy and you're saying to yourself, man, where should I be? Like, I just feel off the mark here.
Right.
Dude, that's when I have the most fun and I go in and hang in places that have almost no shooting lanes. It's so nasty. Maybe you're only 8 to 10 feet off the ground, like just nasty in there. And that's always where I start to find deer movement.
Yeah.
And usually it's just like looking for a doe group popping out. That's where they're bedding, and just throwing a stand up in there, coming back the next morning and watching more deer movement.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too. Like sometimes we get so complacent that, you know, we don't leave those habitual stands, you know, we stay in those spots year after year after year after year. Well, there becomes a pattern with that too, you know, and deer catch on to some of that to some extent. But once you get down out of that stand and you start looking around a little bit, I mean, I literally have had to move my stand 10 yards, 20 yards into just different trees, different angles, and still have success on the same pieces of property. So, you know, sometimes it doesn't take all that much, but then there's times where like this past fall, I didn't think things were going to work, you know, and I thought it was a goofy rut, you know, and then here I am dragging this sled out there with two decoys in it and in order to make this hunt work for me, you know?
Right. Yeah. Going back to that 2012 hunt where I jumped the deer on the creek bed in this big river bottom, this creek eventually connects to a bigger, it's not a big river. I would say it's a small river or a big creek. But it's a small, it's this small waterway connects to a bigger waterway. It creates a peninsula where the deer like to go in because it's always thick there. And you're sitting about 70 to 80 yards off of a field, like an ag field in the river bottom. Mm-hmm. And so I can remember in this, like I went in, I set up, I was off the mark as far as deer movement was concerned. That night after that hunt, after all the deer worked in a different direction from me, I tore down. I got a little bit closer to the bedding. I set up, and then the next morning I was back in there. And I was limited access, so I had to do some things that I normally don't do with my access routes just because of limited access. But I knew that once I got into the tree, I would be good. Because for some reason that year I had a lot of south winds and a lot of east, like a southeast wind a lot, which it's great. You can hunt. I always have a couple stands set up. But once you get like 5 days of east winds, and you're kind of like, okay, that's enough east winds. Thanks for letting me put myself in an east wind stand once, twice, five times. And now you're like, come on, dude. Like, I need something different.
Yeah. So that's a real thing. So yeah. What year do you remember getting south or not south, but east winds? Because like we're from the Midwest, you know, like we always get predominant west winds. So what year was it that you're like, oh my gosh, we got east winds?
It wasn't this past season, but it was the season before, right?
Yeah.
Where I mean, all we had was like, dude, I think I hunted probably 8 to 10 days of east wind stands. Yeah. And I'm just like, okay. Because for me, just circumstance wise, east wind means I have to go all the way through my properties to get to east wind stands to where they're blowing into someplace where deer are not.
Right.
And so I was intruding on my properties heavily that year and having to say like, well, I hope they're not here right now and walking in through the middle of the timber or through some terrain feature, getting to an east wind stand. And it sucks, dude.
Yeah, I don't know if it was just like a big revelation that I had in hunting or what it was, you know, or just never paid attention to the wind that much. But for me, it was probably a little bit longer ago than that. You know, I could go back maybe 5-10 years to where it was like, okay, we had an east wind that day, but it just didn't seem like we had as many east winds as we had maybe 5 years ago, just say. And now it's like we can get stretches of east winds and they can be brutal on some of the spots. A lot of my spots, I can't even hunt if I have east wind.
You know, for me, my best years have the most inconsistent winds. Where what I mean by that is there's a lot of motion in the wind directions. This is just an educated guess, we'll call it. Yeah. And that's me having to bounce around between stands, because once you get a X number of days at X particular wind, then the doe groups get into their routine that switches and they'll go a different direction. Right. My favorite, and this is where I always catch the deer moving, the bucks moving the most during the breeding season, is when a wind is like at 2 days on south, then it shifts and goes 2 days northwest, then it shifts and goes a day to the north. Oh, here comes the front, a day and a half of an east wind. Oh, you know, like now it's southwest after the front goes through, warm front comes through, cold front, north, northwest. And it's just that type of motion makes bucks have to work harder, in my opinion, to find a doe group.
Yep.
Because the doe groups are consistent for the most part. And if there's different winds, they're moving in different directions and the bucks are having to change up their cruising mentality, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely plays a factor in your strategy and in your stand setups and stuff, you know, but it was just something that, you know, years ago, I didn't really set up. I mean, I'll be honest, if I go back 26 years now, I've been hunting. Yeah. I never set my stand up according to wind, you know, I didn't know. So you know, so now fast forward 5 years from that and it's like, okay, I start to learn a little bit about the wind, but I'm not even thinking about thermals yet, you know? So then fast forward 10 years from that. So we go back 16 years now and now you start to worry about your wind and it's like, okay, well it's predominant west wind and you don't give much care for anything else. You just know like, okay, I'm gonna set my stand up based on a west wind. That's it.
Right.
And then you fast forward from that and it's like, holy cow, all these different wind factors and then the thermals and everything that play a factor, there's a lot that goes into it. So that's where it's like a lot of times we overlook these small properties with just that simple factor in itself. Like you can dumb it down by having less to work with. My wife's motto is less is more.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a tricky one.
For what that's worth. I know.
That's a tricky one. Watch out when they say that.
I'm actually getting stared at right now.
Watch out with that. Watch out with that.
Yep.
Because it's not. More is more, right?
Oh, more is more.
More is more. I'll tell you this, man. But it really is. It really does suck to have only 40 acres to hunt or only 10 acres. Dude, I know people out there. Well, I mean, that maybe they do, maybe they don't have, you know, they've never went out and scouted public, or maybe they're just happy with their 10 acres or 20 acres that they have. Nothing wrong with that, but it does become more difficult. I'm that guy who likes options. And throughout the course of my life, I've had the ability to hunt on, you know, more acreages, but kind of going back to more acres, I should say, not acreages, more acres. And that, you know, at the peak of having access to hunt specific places, you know, I was hunting 2,500 acres of ground out. Not all of that was timber, but little fingers here, little fingers there, you know, one big property, you know, a handful of really, you know, smaller little, you know, old cattle pastures that have grown over, that kind of stuff. And some river, like just little slivers that go down into a river bottom, and you'd catch deer movement there. But I've been blessed to do that, because I'm that guy who likes options, and my options always are based off wind direction. Now, what I will say, is that, on this topic of wind direction, is you can do some pretty creative things if you put your mind to it and really sit down about walking, knowing when to walk into the property has a lot to do. Like if you hunt a property and the deer are there during the dark, right before the morning light, and you are trying to get in there, and it could be difficult, right? On a whole bunch of different wind directions. But there's properties that I hunt, my newest farm that I have access to, the deer aren't there in the middle in the morning, like an hour before, but they're coming. They're going to come to it. And this is where I always go, like, I get in there with the wrong wind. I know the wind is blowing into this piece, but once I get to the stand, then I'm good.
And
there's going to be some scent potentially floating around, and but once the deer start to funnel back into this property in the morning, then I have a good chance of running into this. But I can't do that on certain stands. You know, I can't do that on certain stands. Other times of the afternoon, because the deer are now already in this farm.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Yeah, and so I think what you're, you know, the way I take what you're saying is my access is crucial, but like sometimes I'll throw that wind out the window on the way to the stand, and then my wind is more important when I'm in the stand. If your scent's blowing while you're accessing your stand, the deer might just get up and adjust, right? They're not necessarily gonna leave the countryside, you know. So if you know that your stand is locked tight and your stand scent is going a different direction, maybe those deer just calm back down after another 150 yards or whatever, and then they come back in later. You know, so I don't know that that's as much pressure as sometimes we may think it is.
Yeah. I think a lot of it just comes down to if they smell you or not. If they see you without smell, or they hear you without smell. I mean, have you ever listened to two raccoons fight? Or like climb up and down a tree, or turkeys fly up. I mean, it's noise that you can pinpoint and identify, but still it's noise, right? A coyote running through the woods, a deer running through the woods that another doe group hears, cattle, like there's so much noise, owls hooting and stuff like that. There's so much noise. I feel like just you, they're going to probably be able to identify noise and go, well, that's something that I'm not used to. But at the same time, they get over it if there's no smell.
Yeah, if they're not associating two things together, you know, sight and smell or sight and sound, you know, then they're probably more relaxed with it. Like, okay, I smelt this, but I don't smell it over here. Or I saw this, but nah, it's gone now. So I think sometimes you can roll that. But I think rolling the dice on that really comes down to knowing your property and when to kind of throw that stuff out the window.
Right. So when it comes to like big bucks, let's finish this episode by maybe talking about a specific big buck and what he taught you about your strategy or your access routes or anything like that.
So I'm going to go way back to the first buck I ever shot, and it's an easy story for me to tell. A buddy of mine had gone out on a Sunday, and we had hunted this new piece of property. It had a pond in it and then a few acres of timber, and there was standing corn, and it was getting towards the end of October. I believe him and I were there on the 26th of October. And he went to one side of the pond, basically the northeast corner, and I was sitting on the southwest corner. And I set up on the ground and not knowing, you know, this is my third year of hunting, period, of bow hunting and everything. Lo and behold, I didn't see anything, you know, but I guess probably a half hour before dark, he called me. He says, hey, I just shot a 10 point. And, you know, obviously I was ecstatic and I get over there and sure enough, he did. Fast forward to the next day. The next day, I was in the operators union. And I used to run a road paver, so I'd smelt like asphalt and diesel fuel and everything. And I had it in my mind that I was hunting that afternoon. And so I had my hunting stuff with me. And after work, I flew down to the property, and I knew I'd have a couple hours, you know, to sit. And so I parked in the waterway along the fence line, and I literally just ripped off my work clothes and threw on some camouflage, and I just beelined it to where this tree stand was. And that's the calmest I ever sat in a tree stand. I didn't call, I didn't move. You know, I had all these intentions on just learning what he felt that night in that stand from the night before, you know, because I hadn't felt that yet. You know, I hadn't felt what it was like to shoot a buck. And so it was probably a half hour before dark, and to my west, there was this open, like, old pasture ground, and it was probably maybe a half acre to three quarters of an acre. Nothing big. It was like at the end of a cornfield, and the corn rows came right into it. I heard this rustling in the corn, and I turned around over my shoulder, because the stand's facing kind of the other way. So the stand's facing to the east a little bit, and I look, and there's this giant buck standing there staring, you know, and at that point he's probably 50 to 60 yards. And so I didn't realize at the time what it was that was so important about this hunt until just years ago. Yeah. This buck walks out of the corn. He walks to the north and basically walks a rectangle. He comes to the east and then he comes back south. And as he's coming back south, he doesn't come all the way over to the fence line or anything. He just kind of cuts a crease right down towards, there's timber to the south of me. So he's just working that trail, and he gets to 35 yards and I shot him. I never realized what he was doing, what he was scent checking that whole area, you know, not that he could smell me because the wind was out of the west at that point, but he was scent checking that whole little block. You know, he'd got up in his bed was in the corn, and walked around that whole block, scent checked it and everything. And so the other thing I learned about it was not only will they deliberately walk out of their way to check something for the wind and the scent, but where a big buck is, there's going to be another big buck. So like 2 days in a row, we shoot, you know, the buck I ended up shooting was the biggest bodied buck I've ever shot. He's almost 300 pounds, you know, in a beautiful rack, very lucky as a bow hunter, obviously, to shoot something like that with your first deer. But it took me 3 years to learn some of that.
Yeah.
The other part of it I learned is you could smell like complete garbage as long as you're using the wind.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So there's a lot of people that, dude, I had this guy. It was this year. And I was just off the mark a lot this year. I missed a really good 150 class 10 pointer two times, in 5 minutes. And so I had this guy reaching out to me on social media, and he was just like, dude, who cares what you smell like? Just get in there. Just move. Just go. Just go. Just get in there. Who cares what the wind's doing? It's the rut. It's the rut. And like, okay, yeah, some of that plays a point, right? But at the same time, if a doe smells you and a buck is behind her, you're toast, dude.
Yeah.
You're toast. I don't care what time of year it is. If a doe smells you, it's over.
Right.
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 Now, a buck can even be a little stupid sometimes. But for me, dude, I just have so many bad experiences. Like, forget the wind, just hunt.
Yeah.
Right. I always take into consideration where the wind's blowing. Now, when I get aggressive on cutting the wind and I have my Ozonix in the tree with me, then yes, I get a little bit more aggressive, but I'm not sitting here just haphazardly going into a place and saying, let it fly. Like, let's just let it fly. I can't do that, because I've just learned over the years that it just does not pay off anymore. Yeah.
Well, I think to elaborate a little bit more on that before I, you know, open my mouth and insert foot, you know, smelling like garbage is one thing. Like, I literally was using the wind knowing that I could not hunt on the backside of me, knowing where deer were going to come from. So my scent was literally blowing into an area I didn't have permission to hunt. I couldn't hunt, and I couldn't walk onto, and I didn't anticipate deer movement on that. Anyways, so for a deer to walk downwind of me over there and then blow, well, I guess they weren't going to come in shooting distance anyways.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying with that.
Right. No, but you're playing the wind is what I'm getting at.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what you smell like. It's the fact that whether you smell like asphalt or whether you smell like human or you scent spray or whatever it is, you play the wind, none of that matters to a deer's nose because the deer aren't smelling it.
Right.
Yeah. And what I'm saying is in conjunction with that, like a deer, you can't, like, dude, I've tried to beat a deer's nose. I think I may have beat it a couple times using an Ozonix, but not with any sprays really per se, especially if your breath is going in a specific direction. So like, let's just say, for example, the Code Blue scent sprays that they sell, that's just going to get sprayed on my boots for the most part. Or after a hunt where I'm doing a run and gun and I really was sweating heavily or something like that, I'll spray down my clothes. But I'm not relying on anything to just all of us. There's no magic thing saying, here, spray this, use this. Because even with an Ozonix, something that I truly believe in, I'm getting busted if my wind's wrong. 100%. You know what I mean? And so if you use all these things the correct way, yes, you'll get it. But if you go in there and you're going and the wind's blowing directly on a trail where deer are going to come down, that's just not smart. What I mean by not smart is to go in there and hunt that if you know. Like when I started hunting, I didn't know those things. And it took me a handful of years to understand, like, okay, I got to stop doing, I'm making the same mistake 10 times in a row. I got to do something different.
Yeah. I think that's the thing too. Cause I mean, when we talk about putting sight, sound and smell together, you know, like this deer up here, I'm going to go back to him. So I saw him a half hour before I shot him, and he actually, I'm pretty confident, saw me, and he worked to the south and everything. And I did a sequence of calls, and then he couldn't locate where those deer were fighting. And long story short, he ends up coming back in and doesn't see me, but grunts and then peeks his head out around the corner just enough. And that's all it took. But he didn't associate two things, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's something to be said about that. Like, you know, a deer may see you walk in, but if they don't smell you, you know, and don't hear you,
yeah,
you know, and then try it the other way. If they smell you, but don't see you or hear you, you know, so I think there's something to be said about that time. There's times where I think you can get away with maybe one, but if yeah. you're thinking you're going to get away with both, it's yeah. not going
to
happen.
A lot of that, in my opinion, has to do with how close you are too.
Yeah.
If you're 400 yards away and a deer smells you, like your scent profile is so watered down by the time they get to it that
yep.
they may not come your way, but they're not going to blow and go crazy. Some does might because they're evil,
yeah.
but outside of that, I think like if a deer smells you at 20 yards versus 200 yards, you're going to get a different reaction out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, 100%.
Yeah. Well, what else? Or what else before we shut her down, dude? We've had kind of a good BS session here.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a good BS session on, you know, not only how to use some of this tactics coming out of a winter like we've had, you know, as far as shed hunting and stuff, but also doing that, going back a couple episodes where we were talking about postseason scouting, mm-hmm. you know, so when I went out shed hunting last week, that was more of my intentions were to postseason scout than to shed hunt. And I think it's still, especially with no snow on the ground, this is the time to get out and do that right now.
Yeah. 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 And I think right now with no snow, a lot of it has to do with food, deer movement and food. But if you go into a place right now, there's a couple places that I'm thinking about, zero vegetation on the ground or on the trees right now. Dude, I want to get into this one spot. I want to move this tree stand, honestly, like 30 yards, maybe 20 yards. And get it in a tree, cut all the limbs, like cut these shooting lanes and have it ready for the rut. Cause I missed a lot of deer movement by 30 yards this year.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I'm going to move a tree stand. Actually, I'm going to move three tree stands. And I'm going to start rocking and rolling on some habitat management and moving some tree stands before I have to have my knee surgery in March. And then I'm going to get my goal is to have my farm set up for this next hunting season here pretty soon, at least my historical rut travel corridors anyway.
Yeah. I mean, and weather wise, it looks like you got about a month to get some of that stuff done before your knee. And, you should be able to be in pretty good shape, hopefully. Yeah. And in the fact that you know, our age, you know, we're not that bad. So I think your knee will recover fine. So
there you go. There you go. All right, everybody, do us a huge favor. Go to iTunes or Spotify, wherever you download the How to Hunt Deer podcast. It gives us a little bit of momentum. If you guys go leave a 5-star review, say that this podcast is not only educational, but entertaining as well. Also go to the How to Hunt Deer YouTube channel. And you can find that at How to Hunt Deer on YouTube and subscribe to it. And the more subscribers we get, it unlocks certain things that we can do. And we're going to be putting out some more videos the closer we get to the season here pretty soon as far as additional content outside of just the podcast. So YouTube offers that as well. Go subscribe and then tell your friends, man. Outside of that, Jason, good chatting with you again. Glad you're back here. Solo episodes, yeah. Just not, we don't have the vibe like a duo. So I'm glad you're back. Hopefully the rest of the house building goes better than what it has. And
I hope so. Hopefully the end is near. So
the end is near. There we go.
Yep.
All right, everybody, have a good one. Good vibes. Wear your safety harness and we'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.